Good morning and welcome to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Paul Lawrence, partner in charge of the IBM Center for the Business of Government. We created the center in 1998 to encourage discussion and research into new approaches to improving government effectiveness. You can find out more about the center and our programs by visiting us on the web at www.businessofgovernment.org. The Business of Government Radio Hour features a conversation about management with a government executive who is changing the way government does business. Our special guest this morning is Ambassador Randall Tobias, the U.S. Global AIDS Coordinator. Good morning, Ambassador Tobias.
Good morning, Paul.
And joining us in our conversation also from IBM's Kim Hinsman. Good morning, Kim.
Good morning, Paul.
Well, Ambassador Tobias, perhaps you could begin this segment by setting a context for our listeners. Could you tell us about the mission of the Office of the U.S. Global AIDS Coordinator?
The mission is really very straightforward and flows from the announcement that President Bush made in his 2003 State of the Union when he laid out his own concerns about the fact that HIV/AIDS is really destroying the world, 8,000 people dying every single day around the world. And so in that State of the Union message, the president committed $15 billion to be expended over 5 years and to be done in a way that really is not business as usual, to bring resources from the American people to attack this issue. And so what flowed out of that is something called the President's Emergency Plan for AIDS Relief.
I'm curious about the size of your organization, sort of the people who work with you and their skill set.
One of the things that's very unique about the approach the president took is that I have been given the authority and the responsibility and, more importantly, the very direct support from the president to create what is really a virtual organization. I have 50 or 60 people in my office in Washington, but all of the people in all of the agencies of the United States government here in Washington and in over 100 countries around the world who are in any way engaged in HIV/AIDS activities on behalf of the United States government now fall under the umbrella of this emergency plan. So we've put together a unified strategy. I've asked people to leave their uniforms at the door, to be now a part of the team supporting the president's emergency plan. But at the same time, because we have left people organizationally in all of the various agencies, we were able to get started much more quickly and take advantage of the contracting mechanisms, the auditing mechanisms, all of those kinds of tools that exist in USAID or Health and Human Services or the Department of Defense. If it works, it really represents the best of both worlds and is in some ways as significant in changing the way that government works as the mission that we are engaged in.
Ambassador Tobias, can you tell us a little bit more about your role and your responsibilities as the U.S. Global AIDS Coordinator?
The president, as I said, announced this initiative in January of 2003. The Congress passed the legislation in May of 2003. The president announced his nomination of me for this position in July, and I was confirmed by the Senate in October. At that point, the president's emergency plan had one employee, no office, no organization chart, no strategy, a lot of very good thinking that had been done by half a dozen people or so, but a great deal of work to do to operationalize it. So the first thing that I had to do was to begin to get a group of people together and to draw together a strategy and then put together an organization to begin to think about how we were going to implement that strategy. And beyond that, it's been kind of the typical leadership requirements that one might find in a startup organization.
And what were your previous experiences prior to your appointment as ambassador in October 2003?
Well, this is my first experience working for the government. I had spent about 40 years in the private sector, spent a long time in what used to be known as the Bell System, and was the vice chairman of AT&T and went through the breakup of the Bell System in the early 80s and was there until 1993. And I left then to become the chairman and CEO of Eli Lilly and Company, the pharmaceutical company, and was there for 6 years. In the meantime, I've served on a number of corporate boards. But I also had experiences as a trustee at Duke University, where I was the chairman of the board, and in a number of philanthropic activities. And the combination of those things, I think, in many ways, prepared me for this particular assignment.
So can you give us then a comparison of how that work in the private sector compares to the work that you're doing in the public sector?
I think the biggest difference is that in the government, there are a broad range of interested parties, both inside the government and outside the government, who have some stake, some genuine interest in what it is you're trying to do. And often those interests are not necessarily in alignment. And so interfacing with all of those various interests, bringing that input and those insights together, and at the same time staying focused on the fact that that I work for the president, I work report to the Secretary of State, and I'm really carrying out the president's vision. And so it's necessary with all the pushes and tugs that come along to stay very focused on that mission.
Is there any downside to sort of working so closely with the president? I imagine it expedites a lot of things that might otherwise take a while, but is there any hidden surprise that you've uncovered?
If there's a downside, I certainly can't think of what it is. I would not be here were it not for my having become convinced during the recruiting process of the president's enormous personal commitment to this particular initiative. And his follow-through has been terrific.
And I was going to ask you, what made you accept his invitation?
Well, I was sitting at home having breakfast one morning, minding my own business. This not having been how I planned to spend this part of my life. And got a message from someone who used to work for me, who was in a senior position in the government, saying that my name had appeared on the radar screen in the Presidential Personnel Organization for a job that was very important to the president, but that it would involve going to work for the government to full time. And hypothetically, would I be interested in talking about it? I said, well, hypothetically, I'm willing to talk about it, but I'm really, you know, not looking for something of that nature to do. But over a period of a few weeks that followed, including discussions at some length with the president, with Colin Powell, who was then Secretary of State, with Condoleezza Rice, who was then the National Security Advisor, and others, I became convinced of not only the depth of the commitment to this initiative, but I became more fully aware of the magnitude of the problem that HIV/AIDS presents in the world. You know, there's an old saying that when the President of the United States asks you to do something, it's hard to say no, and it is. But I have come to believe that this is really the greatest privilege of my life, that all of the other things that I've done in my corporate career, I now think in many ways were preparing me to give back and to do something of this nature, and it's a real joy to be here.
How did you think about the time frame over which this problem would be addressed? You talk about the legislation being 5 years, but I'm just curious how you thought about the time frame for the total problem.
Well, I think it's important to think about this as the first 5 years of a long-term journey. I think the title of the program, the President's Emergency Plan, was very correct. We need an emergency response. Things that in the government sometimes take months or years to get implemented, I've been trying to do in days or weeks because it is an emergency and 8,000 people are dying every day. But I also think that this is not a problem that's going to be certainly totally addressed during the time I'm in Washington and probably during my lifetime. But I think we can build a very important foundation for addressing HIV/AIDS globally, and we're making progress in that regard.
And what was your perception of the confirmation process before you went into it, and how did it match your expectations?
It was much more complicated than I had expected. The requirements for providing information, for example, in my corporate career, for probably the last 25 years or so before joining the government, I was running large organizations doing business in 120, 130 countries around the world. And one of the requirements in the forms was to provide information on every trip I had ever made outside the United States, every government official that I had ever talked to on any of those trips. There was another question asking for copies of every speech I had made in the last 20 years or something. And so simply assembling that data, I think probably this is a process that would benefit, first of all, from some technology so that there was a common database of the questions that are needed by various arms of the government, where today everybody kind of has their same form. But it took a lot of time and energy to get into that process. But it's part of our system. It's part of the system of the president nominating and the Senate reviewing and confirming. And I think there are lots of checks and balances in that in the end serve us very, very well in terms of the purpose. It's just the process, I think, could probably be improved.
That's interesting, especially think about the mounds of pieces of paper you must have filled out. What's the history behind the president's emergency plan for AIDS relief? We'll ask Ambassador Randall Tobias, the U.S. Global AIDS Coordinator, about this when our conversation about management continues on the Business of Government Hour.